The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. If you let a person talk long enough, you'll hear their true intentions. Listen twice, speak once. As these wise words from American rapper Tupac Shakur indicate, today's episode is all about talking, and talking, and talking. Oh, and listening, but mostly talking. What was I saying? Luckily, we've got stories from Dorothy Rosby to help keep us on track. From her book, I Used to Think I Was Not That Bad, and Then I Got to Know Me Better, copyright 2014, stories about talking too much, listening too little, and good habits to avoid both. Our first story today, Speak Up or Get a Grip. Recently, a friend gave me one of those grippers you use to open jar lids. She said she'd found it at a thrift shop, and remembering I'd said I needed one, she'd purchased it for me. I thanked her profusely. How nice to be thought of! Except that I didn't remember telling her I needed it. Not that I don't need it. It's just that up until that moment, with the gripper staring me in the face, it had not occurred to me how much I need it. My friend seemed proud of herself for being so thoughtful. She proceeded to tell me her acquisition story, as bargain shoppers often do, and I pretended to listen while I racked my brain. Had I made any comment that would have led her to believe I was having trouble opening jars? I couldn't remember a single thing. And yet, I have had trouble opening jars. If I hadn't mentioned I needed a gripper, I should have. My friend was now carrying on about how often she uses her own gripper, as do her mother, her sister, and the neighbor down the street. And then it occurred to me, what if my friend has me confused with someone else? Now that person will go on struggling with her kosher dills and grape jelly, and it will be my fault. What a thing to have on my conscience! But what could I do? By that time, we were a good 10 minutes into the conversation. A conversation in which I had enthusiastically thanked my friend for her thoughtfulness and agreed that, yes, I could really use the gripper. It seemed too late to say, I'm sorry, now that I think about it, I think you must have me confused with someone else who's lost their grip. But I didn't have the courage. Instead, I offered to pay her for the gripper, which I hadn't planned on buying. I was concerned that if I paid her, she'd start bringing me all sorts of things I didn't need, but don't know it yet. I offered anyway, and she graciously declined. It was a gift that was probably meant for someone else. I took it, and use it often, always wondering, am I forgetful, or am I a liar? Don't answer that. Meanwhile, my friend hasn't brought me any other useful kitchen items, or anything else for that matter. Maybe she's on to me, or maybe I haven't mentioned I need anything else, in which case, I could really use some wooden spoons. I'm sure this story serves to illustrate a point, though I'm not sure what it is. Maybe just that the longer you wait, the harder it gets to speak up. Whether it's telling your neighbor that it was you who reported their barking dog to animal control, or telling your parents that you're the one who burned down the garage when you were 14. These are just examples, mind you. We had a carport when I was growing up, and it's still standing. I swear my delay was only an attempt to buy thinking time. But I waited too long. And I certainly didn't want to embarrass us both after we'd carried on like that. Plus, I was afraid she'd want the gripper back. Sometimes it takes being unable to speak to recognize just how much you really say. Like in our next story, A Woman of Few Well-Chosen Words. You just don't know how much you talk until you can't do it anymore. You're probably thinking, speak for yourself. I wish I could. Like all other body parts, we completely take our vocal cords for granted until they aren't working properly. And mine haven't worked for 3 long days. It's very nearly torture for me, though it must be a pleasant respite to those around me. When I open my mouth to speak, only a whisper comes out, a hoarse whisper at that. I'm the hoarse whisperer, and I don't see how it would make a good movie. At work, I stay in my office, avoiding the break room, normally my favorite spot. I sit staring at my ringing telephone rather than pick it up and whisper into it. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I believe that if you're going to whisper on the telephone, you should be the one placing the call. At home, I rely on my son to answer the phone, though I'm concerned he'll sign us up for a new phone service and a stack of credit cards. He has bigger worries. On my first full day of silence, he asked, "How are you going to call us for supper?" The little sign language I know is not helpful. I can make the sign for thank you, which seems useful, and I love pizza, which does not. Though, get me a pizza might be. And it's also possible that when I think I'm gesturing thank you or I love pizza, I'm actually saying, there's something in your teeth, and what have you done to your hair? Besides, sign language would only be helpful if everyone around me could understand it. Even then, one can only accomplish so much repeating, I love pizza, and even less with, there's something in your teeth. The most painful part of my forced silence is the shocking realization that I talk a lot more than I realize. Though it may not be as shocking to everyone else. Even worse, a great deal of what I say would be better left unsaid. Each time I'm tempted to speak, which is often, I weigh the importance of what I want to say against the pain and effort of forcing a whisper. Most of the time, it isn't worth it. I want to yell at my son for misplacing his keys again. Just as well I don't. I can't find mine either. I want to yell at the man in front of me at the grocery store that he has more than 13 items. Then I realize I have 14. I want to scream at a truckload of teenagers that nearly run me over. It's a good thing I don't. They may turn around and finish the job. The experience leads me to make a vow. Once my voice returns, I will weigh my words more carefully. I will become a woman of few, well-chosen words. And then, in the middle of my third silent night, I trip over a shoe in the dark and swear out loud, few words, but not well-chosen. That's when I realize my voice is back. It sounds like a Canadian honker, but it's back. But with my first words in 3 days being swear words, I've already failed in my pledge. That's almost as sobering as realizing that the most important thing I say all day is, supper's ready. What if the first words ever spoken on the telephone were something entirely different? What even were the first words ever spoken on a telephone? We find out both in our next story, What hath Bell wrought? The first words ever spoken on a telephone were those of inventor Alexander Graham Bell to his assistant, Thomas Watson, on March 10, 1876. Mr. Watson, come here. I want to see you. These words not only marked the beginning of telephone history, they are also the first documented example of poor telephone manners. No, hello. No, please. No, am I getting you at a bad time? I suppose we can forgive Bell for his lack of courtesy. He must have been terribly excited, what with inventing the gizmo that would revolutionize communication and make it possible to win radio call-in contests. And Watson may not have taken offense anyway. He was probably thrilled he wouldn't have to order his pizza by mail anymore. But these days, we need to be more aware of telephone etiquette. While telephones have evolved to the point that they can do everything but shine our shoes, telephone manners started out badly and went down line from there. I don't mean to imply that I'm above poor telephone manners myself. I'm not old enough to have used a party line, but if I'd grown up with one, I can assure you that I would have listened in on my neighbors. Had Bell's telephone been on a party line, his first words might have been, "Mr. Watson, come here. I don't want Mr. Johnson or Mrs. Smith to steal my invention." At some point, party lines went away, and the only people who could listen in on telephone calls were family members. I know this because I did it. There were telephones in every home, and they were ringing at all hours of the day and night. Watson might have answered that first historic phone call with, "Mr. Bell, I told you not to call me during dinner." Eventually, phone booths popped up everywhere, paving the way for Superman comics and creating a whole new set of issues. If he'd built one of those right away, Bell would have had to borrow a quarter to make that first call. And then along came the answering machine. "Mr. Watson, pick up the phone. I know you're there." Then there was the cordless phone, which my family lovingly referred to as the walk-around phone when we could find it, and the walk-away phone when we couldn't. Had Bell invented it right away, he would have had to ask his assistant for help before he could make his first call. "Mr. Watson, where's the telephone?" "The what, sir?" We're all lucky Bell didn't start out with call waiting. Who knows how things would be different if Watson had answered that first momentous telephone call with, "Let me put you on hold. I've got another call." Kidding! Or what if Bell's first telephone call had caller ID, allowing Watson to screen his calls? "I'm not answering that. Mr. Bell is bossy, and he has no manners." Then there was the cell phone, and a return to eavesdropping. Except, cell phones aren't as efficient as party lines because we can only hear one side of the conversation. Fortunately, Bell could have kept his message private by texting, "Watson, come here." And Watson would have texted back, "No need to text me, sir. I'm in the next room." Had Bell's first phone been a smartphone, Watson would have been too busy playing Candy Crush or changing his ringtones to answer the call. Bell would have stomped down the hall, taken one look at his once loyal assistant, and said, "Oh, Watson, what have I done?" And Watson would have replied, "Who cares, Mr. Bell? Let's take a selfie." Our next story outlines why saying what we actually mean may not be the best policy after all. The story title, "What I Meant to Say." When you tell the waitress, "I'd like the salad," don't you really mean, "I'll order the salad. What I'd like is a bacon double cheeseburger, French fries, and a large chocolate shake"? Well, that's what I mean. But if I said what I meant, It wouldn't be too much later that I'd be saying, I guess my eyes were bigger than my stomach. And we both know I don't really mean that. Clearly, we don't always say what we mean. And I'm not necessarily suggesting we start. If we did, both the employment and the divorce rates would be worse than they are. Nevertheless, sometimes I find it refreshing when other people say what they really mean, as long as it isn't offensive and I agree with it. When someone is giving me directions and they say, "You can't miss it," I know what they really mean is that they can't miss it. But remember, they've already been there. Is it on fire? Blocking the road? No? Then I can miss it. When someone says, "Nothing is impossible," they're not recommending you try pouring 10 ounces of hot cocoa into an 8-ounce cup or attempt skydiving without a parachute. If they say they slept like a baby, they don't mean they woke up crying at midnight because they were wet and hungry. If the sign says, "Slow children," it's not a reflection on the families in the neighborhood. And if there's an advertisement with the words, "Children are free," it probably means children get in free. You shouldn't get too excited if you're in the market for one. When the trailer says the movie is for mature audiences only, chances are good it's really for immature adults. And when you call up the doctor's office and the receptionist says, "Can you spell your name?" I think she already knows you can. Sometimes people say things they may or may not actually mean. But insecure listeners like me can easily take them the wrong way. Like when someone says, "You look nice today," I always wonder if they think I don't any other day. If they say, "You look like you've lost weight," I wonder if that means they think I needed to. And if they say, "You can get away with it," I wonder if they really mean they wouldn't be caught dead in it. When somebody says, "No offense, but..." I've taken offense before they get the rest of the sentence out. And if they say, "Don't take this wrong," I already have. When someone asks, "How are you?" don't you wonder if they really want to know? When I answer, "I'm doing well," I certainly don't mean it every time. If somebody tells you, "You're not getting any younger," I'm pretty sure they mean, "You're old." When they say, "Your heart is in the right place," they're implying that everything else is a little off kilter. And if someone says, "Well, it's none of my business," trust me, that doesn't mean they don't want to know. We should all strive to listen more. Next, we'll hear an argument for making a list of candidates. The story, Let's Hear It for Listeners. When I attend a self-improvement seminar, I like to start applying what I learn immediately to the other people in my life. Apparently, I'm not alone. After a recent workshop on good listening, several women told me they were inspired to get their families to attend. We were in agreement. We are good listeners. Our problem is being listened to. At least, I think that's what we agreed on. Some bad listeners I know pretend to listen. They nod, smile, even respond. Sort of. A woman I know came home from a difficult day at work, hungry and dreading the prospect of cooking dinner. When she saw her husband sprawled on the couch, absorbed in NCIS reruns, she snapped, "I should leave you," she said, loud enough for the neighbors to hear. Without taking his eyes off the television, he responded, "We'll get a pizza." I have a similar effect on men. I recall an incident that occurred long ago at a high school dance. Very long ago. You know the kind. The wallflowers of one gender lined up by one wall. The wallflowers of the other gender lined up by the other wall. And the popular kids dance in the middle. I was by the west wall. Then Mr. Wonderful came over to me. He didn't ask me to dance, but he didn't ask to copy my homework either. I was so flattered that it took me a while to notice he wasn't listening when I responded to his charming weather-related questions. He was scanning the room for someone else to talk to. Years of similar experiences have taught me how to deal with this type of bad listener. Keep talking as though you don't notice their rudeness, then casually say something shocking, like, "Is it true what I heard about your wife?" Or, "How did you get the black eye?" The worst kind of listener is the one who is just waiting for you to pause so she can talk. Sometimes she doesn't even wait. I sympathize with interrupters, being one myself. I have more trouble with the one-upper interrupter, who, no matter what you say, has a better story. Tell her about your appendectomy, and she interrupts to say, "Try living through a heart transplant." Tell her your grandfather knew Elvis. She tells you her grandfather was Elvis, and he never mentioned your grandfather. You can't beat one-upper interrupters. I recommend you let them win. But first, casually change the topic to grave mistakes you've made or your most embarrassing moments. Up until now, we've dealt with bad listeners who at least pretend to listen. There are some who don't even grunt in the appropriate places. I have this problem with my son. While I speak, he goes on doing what he's doing with nary a nod to show he's heard a word I've said. In response to that annoying habit, I've developed my own annoying habit. I answer myself. Let's say I ask my son to vacuum. He says, "Nothing." So I say, "Certainly, Mother, you gave birth to me, fed me, and clothed me. Vacuuming is the least I can do. Shall I wash the windows, too?" At this, he is guaranteed to respond, "I heard you." Who knew? I have to admit, I'm not always the best listener myself. I do a lot of things beside listen while I'm on the phone. Dishes, laundry, cooking. Next to the dishwasher, the cordless phone has done more for my housework than any other technological advance since the broom. It hasn't done much for my listening skills, however. And I would like to improve my listening abilities. I really would. But not half as much as I want the people in my life to improve theirs. And finally, Dorothy Rosby shares her tips for how to be a better listener, no matter who we want to stop talking. The story, Listen Up, 6 Habits for Good Listeners. Somebody very wise once said, "We have 2 ears and 1 mouth so that we can listen twice as much as we eat." No, wait, that doesn't sound right. Maybe I wasn't listening. And I really want to be a better listener. The benefits are clear. People like you better when you listen to them. Every once in a while, you learn something. And I can't speak for anyone else here, though I'd really like to, but listening more than I talk often keeps me from saying something I haven't thought of yet. So, after much research and soul-searching, I've come up with my 6 habits for good listeners. 1. Become genuinely interested in what other people have to say. Like most things in life, that's easier to talk about than it is to do. But remember, you can learn something from almost everyone. Though, in some cases, It may be just that you never want to talk as much as they do. Focus directly on the speaker. Give them your complete and undivided attention. Sit up straight, lean forward, and look them right in the eye. Do this until they stop talking, or until they start to look intimidated and back away from you. 3. Get rid of all distractions when you're trying to carry on a conversation. This will give the other person the impression that you're listening, even if you aren't. Turn off the television. Put your cell phone down and rip theirs out of their hands if you have to. That ought to encourage them to open up to you. 4. Fight the urge to interrupt. I empathize with interrupters, being one myself. Sometimes I'm so interested in what the other person is saying that I just have to know more. So I interrupt to ask a question. For example, what on earth are you talking about? Other times I interrupt to finish a sentence for the speaker because I already know what they're going to say, and they're taking way too long to say it. Of course, sometimes I'm wrong, and sometimes I interrupt because what I have to say is, well, more interesting, at least to me. Whatever the reason, interrupting not only annoys the speaker, it also wrecks the flow of their story, and in some cases, brings it to a halt. On the bright side, that gives me a chance to talk. 5. Ask questions at appropriate times. You might be thinking, but won't asking questions signal to the other person that I want them to keep talking? Yes, it will. But asking questions also assures them that you're a good listener who is genuinely concerned about their situation. Unless your question is, are you nuts? Or, what were you thinking? 6. When the person has finished speaking, paraphrase what they've said so that they can clarify any areas of confusion. So, let's see if I understand you correctly. Yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. Except, you probably shouldn't say yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number one more time is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.